Does anybody have any idea where we still are since last week and the week before? It's after Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, he's in the temple precincts and he's teaching. He's been challenged by the chief priests and the elders of the people by what authority are you doing this? And instead he asks them a question instead, which they can't answer. And he starts telling stories and parables. This is actually the third one now. Still in the temple, still speaking to the same people, trying to get them to repent of what they're doing because they are doing such a horrible job of being good leaders of the people that they're actually leading them away from God instead of to God, away from being faithful to the covenant instead of making them more faithful to it, more enriched by it. And so he challenges them over and over and over again. We started off with a passage from Isaiah in which he pulls up this image of God calling people to this great, majestic wedding feast, sparing no expense, basically, and God restoring. They're about to be overrun by Babylon, the Babylonian exile around 587 BC, because they're in the same condition that they are at the time of Jesus, and they're not listening either. In fact, King Manasseh of Israel gets so fed up with Isaiah that he actually has him assassinated by having him sawn in half. The other leading prophet of the time period, Jeremiah, they don't like him a whole lot either because he's doing the same thing. He's telling them basically to their face how corrupted they are. And so while he's over in Egypt, he sends an assassin squad after him basically, and they stone him to death. So, they're just not getting the message, and they're still not. Now, here we are, as they've got Jesus himself, the long-awaited Messiah, whom they refuse to recognize, and he's trying to get them to see, but they prefer to be blind. He brings up and kind of gives a new updated version of the story of the king who's going to throw a wedding banquet for his son. Obviously, the king is who? God. And the son whose wedding banquet's being thrown for is Jesus, the one who's speaking to them. You have all been invited to this wedding feast. And they send out messengers. Come on, it's ready, let's go. And they all go, hey, sorry, I got other stuff to do. So when that fails, he sends out messengers to go out to everybody and bring everybody in. Now, where do you go with that? Here's where the challenging part of scripture passages comes in, because what we are meant to do as we hear and or read these for ourselves is apply them to ourselves. They're dealing with the corrupted leadership in Jesus' day and time, like they were in Isaiah's and Jeremiah's day and time and several other points in their history. Do we have that issue? Do we have any corrupted leaders around here today? I was listening to the news, was it last week or week before, and our fearless leader goes, the greatest existential threat to America and the world today is what? Climate change. I don't know, people rioting in the streets, doing their business in the streets of cities and the rampant crime and, invasions and going in and wiping out people's businesses. That seems like a big problem. The increasing immorality all over the place, that seems like a pretty big problem. Is anything being done about it? No. Now, Jesus is not just addressing the civil leaders of the people, the elders, he's also addressing who? The Jewish religious leadership. What about our own? How's it going? If you listen to our top religious leadership in the Catholic Church, what's the greatest existential threat to humanity? Y'all need to read the news a little more often. It's still climate change. Guess what? I think there are bigger problems. There are some countries in which the Catholic faith is completely falling apart. We're having to do this three-year thing on trying to renew belief in the Eucharist is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. Reality, not symbol. Because so many people in our day and time don't believe it because they weren't what? Properly catechized in it. Taught that this is what we're doing. This is what this is. What happened to marriage and family life over the last 50 years? Is that in good shape? Do you have any idea how low the percentage of marriages is in our day and time? Instead, people just come and live together. Maybe eventually they get married. Most of the time now, they don't even bother. How many children are being born into households where mother and father aren't married? Confusion over what marriage is. You've got this collection of religious authority figures over in Rome doing this synod on synods, which nobody seems to be able to define and make it make sense in English. And some of them are trying to make changes to church teachings, going against what's actually written in here. I think the greatest existential threat in the church today is a loss of faith. And you know, Pope Benedict XVI, while he was still Cardinal Ratzinger, head of the Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, came out with a statement that he made very clearly that the time is going to come when the church is going to undergo a period of great trial and tribulation and suffering and grow smaller. It already has. How are we doing? You know, we're meant to allow this to challenge us. How are we doing? How is our faith? Is it lively and strong? Are we making any effort whatsoever to strengthen it and deepen it so that we have an ever clearer, deeper understanding of what God has given to us and is giving to us in the sacraments and in the scriptures and the teachings of our faith? Are we growing livelier and stronger in it? And here's a big test. I challenge you every once in a while. Here comes another one. Did you listen to the words that I offered up on your behalf to God at the beginning of the Mass? That infamous opening prayer. We asked God for the grace to let His grace always go before us and follow after us, that we might be always ready to do what? So I guess that extra reminder was necessary, wasn't it? To do good works. What does that mean? The end of the gospel is rather curious. Because all of a sudden, you know, the king has sent out these extra messengers to go out and bring all these people in for the wedding banquet. And they do, and they go up and they fill the entire banquet hall with people from all over the place. But the king comes in, and there's this one guy who comes in that he sees who doesn't have a what? A wedding garment. That means he came in his nasty old t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops. Uh-oh. Is that what he meant? No. By a wedding garment, what did Jesus mean? That we are actually living our faith in concrete fashion out there. That we are looking for and responding to opportunities to care for those who are in need all around us. You know, the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, we see people in need and we do what we can. You know, obviously we can't do all of it, but we can each do our part of it and care for those who are in need all around us. And take it even deeper. You know, rightly, the world was very shocked. You're going into Saturday evening and Sunday and Monday of this past week when we heard about the incredible atrocities being committed by Hamas against innocent civilians in Israel and in Gaza. the horrendous things being done to women, children, and infants. Shocked. Yes, we should have been. We should still be. But can we honestly claim that we're doing any better here? One of the things that I noticed, there was a big deal made out of one of the things that got bombed, I think it was Wednesday night or Thursday morning. They even showed a picture of it on this one news website I like to go to, of a Planned Parenthood clinic that caught a missile in Gaza, and it was destroyed. Do we have Planned Parenthood over here? What do they do? What infamous thing does Planned Parenthood do and all the other associated clinics that do the same kind of stuff? What do they do? They're doing the same thing that we're in shock and horror over Hamas doing over in Gaza and in Israel, except they do it behind closed doors with the curtains closed and cover it over with a layer of wrapping paper called euphemisms that make it look all nice and pretty. You know what I'm talking about, right? The same ways of murdering innocent children over there, we do over here, several thousand times a day, every day of the week. Absolutely zero difference, except we're more deceitful about it. There's this grubby little brick building over on Randleman Road in Greensboro, where they do this. It's wrapped in this little pretty, neat euphemism. What's the clinic called? A woman's choice. What's the choice? What's the choice? You know, it's not between rum raisin or butter pecan ice cream. It's whether or not to violently destroy an innocent life. Thousands of times a day, in here, in the state, in the nation, and we make it look innocent and pretty by calling it choice. They could rightly, Hamas, look over at us and say, you know, you're looking at shock and horror we just did, but you're just as guilty as we are. What do we do about it? Do we do anything about it? Yeah, maybe we wouldn't participate in it and do it ourselves, but this is a massive offense against the sacredness of human life, which is a gift from God. Do we just close our eyes and walk on our merry way? Do you realize there are enough Catholics in the United States, if we all banded and worked together and got the message that life is something that comes from God and we have absolutely zero right to interfere on it, we could shut every one of those places down by putting people into place and positions of authority that would do away with all these terribly unjust laws that violate the sanctity of life. We could put that grubby little building clinic on Randleman Road out of business. But what will it take? I'm asking you, what will it take? All of us. We ask God to give us the grace that we might be always ready to do good works. What better work is there than working together to save innocent life, not just over there, but over here? There is so much injustice going on. We have so many people in our own nation that are literally living under slavery, caught by this idiotic, corrupted, mismanaged welfare system that leaves people in a perpetual state, generation after generation after generation, of poverty that they can't get out of. Do we see that? Do we care about it? as citizens of a nation, do we get together and do what we can to start bringing it out of darkness into the light? All of these different things? Do we care? Because that's where it will start, when we start to care. And that means starting to care about where is our own soul going to go when our earthly life is done. Jesus was not just challenging the chief priest and the elders of the law in ancient Israel 2,000 years ago. He's also speaking to challenge all of us here now today. With all the help of God's grace, may we rise together to meet that challenge and do what is right and just in God's sight.